Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we're just going to have a light conversation about, hey, what's this body of mine all about? What is it doing? What's the conversations that are going on among all my cells? How does my body rejuvenate? How does my body deteriorate? I don't know about you, but today I looked at my skin and I said, my gosh, I feel like I'm 100 years old and I'm only in my 60s. What am I missing? Something's off. Something's out there. I don't know what it is, but I need to find it. Today my guest is Ira Pastor. He is the CEO of BioCork Incorporated. And we'll be talking today just about these questions and these answers because really what we're saying is, where is the body going these days? How much do we really know about it? And how much do we just like want to get out there and explore and say, why can't we have skin that'll last forever? Why can't we look like we're in our 20s when we're 80? And why can't we say that if something gets sick or it's not working well, what is the process of rejuvenation, of health? You know, many times people come to me and they'll throw a check on the desk and, hey, you're an alternative person. Go out there. Make me feel like I'm 20 and you've got a week. I'm watching my clock. You know, it's all about, are we in control of our body? Do we have the products, the information? Do we have the sources to be able to make this happen? Ira, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, Ira, don't you think all these questions are, if you really want to pay attention to the world around us, you've got to have those sometime in your life, yes?
Absolutely. These are the questions that we all need to explore, that we've been spending the last 100-plus years on in the traditional healthcare space, and we have no answers for them in the year 2018, so we need to go above and beyond in our examination and exploration of what is really going on out there.
You know, it's kind of crazy because we think about we're given a body, you know, when we're here, and we can always explore that too, but when we're here, we say, this is the body, hey, it's never going to be perfect. It's going to do the bell curve. It's going to grow, and then you hit that little one day or that 1 second in your life, and you're down the other side. And we think, is that really the way it's supposed to be? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I've been in healthcare for over 45 years. I have no answers.
Well, you know, no, it's not the way it's supposed to be. And, you know, one only needs to go out and sort of re-explore the natural world for all of the examples of wonderful organisms that cohabit this planet with us, which from a health and wellness perspective are so much further advanced than we are, to say that, hey, something went wrong with us as human beings.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whether we're talking about the amphibians or the planarians, or many marine organisms that can regenerate and mm-hmm. replace lost or damaged organs and tissues that are identical in both structure and function. And we're talking, you know, not just about sort of the salamander spinal cord, but limbs, eyeballs, right. hearts, and even large parts of the brain. And simultaneously, when you dig a little deeper, and this is a little less well known to the public, but many of these species have fascinating skills for turning back genetic damage when it occurs in their cells. And I love to give the example of cancer, how, you know, everything that lives on this planet gets cancer from humans on down. But there are many species that, you know, they get cancer and shrug it off like it was a common cold. Meanwhile, it sends 8 million of us to the grave every year. And then, of course, there's the sort of the other end of the spectrum where you have some organisms that do not age at all and exhibit so-called negligible senescence. You have some organisms that age in reverse. And then you have a couple really far outliers that die and come back. And, you know, clearly we as humans are very weak when it comes to accomplishing things. Yet we are sort of, you know, one of the byproducts of nature, evolution, Gaia, whatever you want to call it, just find out what went wrong and try to sort of reawaken these capabilities. And that's sort of our mission
today. Well, you know, if you look at it, though, too, if you take each one in a silo and look at it as just as that one entity, they may be able to regenerate, but they may not be able to have the brain function. They may be able to have great skin and be able to hit the wall, as we so to speak with cancer. You know, that's called hitting the wall. My backup system has now defaulted, and I need to figure out another way around it, and I need to get rid of this stuff inside me. You know, I kind of look at it like that. They've done that, and then, well, you know, maybe they aren't able to do some of the other things that humans do. So almost it's like the idea that if a human has a brain and can think and can function and do all these other higher echelon kind of ideas and activities, is that what we gave up to be able to have a body that's kind of defunct? Do you know what I mean? In other words, if we kind of go up that tyranny kind of system, are we losing some of those qualities to be able to gain others, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you see this balance in various places in nature, and you know, many people, specifically when we talk about the topic of regeneration, they come back, you know, well, where did things go wrong? And on that one, it comes back to the fact that, you know, somewhere around that reptile slash mammalian transition, when we became such horrible bleeders, you know, where I point, we're a species that bleeds really there, and we die very quickly when we bleed, that we developed an incredible system for wound healing. We're wonderful at thrombosis, we're wonderful at fibrosis, but yes, we gave up regeneration, rapid regeneration, in exchange for that. So yes, you see a lot of that, but then on the other hand, you've got to believe that whether it's, you know, many of these animals, and dolphins are, you know, one of the prime examples, that their nervous system is substantially more advanced than ours, yet evolutionarily a different path. So you've got to believe that some of these, what I'll call sort of super qualities, superhero qualities that we see out there, and, you know, a point that, you know, magneto navigation with PERD and echolocation, even the ability to see in ultraviolet or infrared wavelength, there's some really neat stuff that nonetheless succeeded in those evolutionary journeys. And you've got to believe, you know, if we use the tools and are smart about it, always, you know, once again, going back to nature and understanding, and we don't want to throw the balance off, we just want to reawaken certain capabilities, that, you know, we will be able to really advance the human condition in the coming years.
Do you think that's because maybe the humans want to have it all? Humans have to say we're the commanders of the natural kingdom, and, hey, we want to be able to think, be able to do, be able to regenerate. We want to have control of it all. I mean, look at it. I mean, you know, you being in pharmaceuticals, you know, many pharmaceuticals come from nature, yet they don't want to say that because they want, quote, control over it. You know, in other words, do we always have to have a system that someone will be dictating how the future will be?
Yeah, I mean, I think no doubt that's a major part of it. And, you know, yes, yeah, so you point to a beautiful example, which I talk about. We took the last 100-plus years, or, you know, whenever, you know, we discovered and synthesized aspirin back in 18-whatever, we took the natural world, primarily the plants, the microbes, fungi, and we built a trillion-dollar industry off of it. But what did we do? And it's sort of one of the paradoxes in life sciences, right? We We study things when we're in biology, and by what? We kill them. We grind them up and destroy them, and we try to take their essence. We don't learn the bigger picture. Some of the bigger pictures I like to point out. The pharmaceutical industry loves single magic silver bullets or stuff. It's their bread and butter. Yet I point out the window here to this tree outside my window. It's been on this planet. Ancestors were on this planet hundreds of millions of years ago, survived ice ages, survived everything that killed us. But it does nothing with a single silver magic bullet. If it did, it would be extinct.
Right.
Nature knows that combinatorial method, the ability to address things from a higher level systems perspective, are the answer, and it is why the tree and the microbe and many low organisms have succeeded in inhabiting this planet hundreds of millions of years, if not billions. Additionally, we forget that those organisms that live here with us that are either substantially extend the lifespan, thousands of years, or the ones that are significantly resilient to disease, have two qualities. They either take very little from this planet, or they give a lot back. And whether that's trees cleaning water, providing oxygen, et cetera. So we need to actually succeed on one side in trying to reestablish our connection and grab some of these kids back. We have to keep in mind our debt to the grander system, the grander ecosystem. And if we fail at that, this will not work.
You look at humans, I think the greatest disservice they've done to this earth is the collection of stuff. I mean, you certainly don't see a salamander carrying around a suitcase, In other words, there's just too much, we perpetuate too much garbage, we perpetuate too many things, and we forget that we say, it's just a material dense thing. It's a material object. When in essence, those things all still carry energy based in them, And it took energy to make them. They contain energy. It'll take energy to destroy them. And we don't even think about it. We just think about, hey, I'm going to buy a TV. Hey, when it breaks, just put it out for the garbage. And it's totally a disconnect in the way that the world is, can be, and the way things are, some people are just so disconnected. It's incredible. You know what I mean?
I would add to that wonderful example. You do not find that level of waste anywhere in nature. The waste for some organism is food or a home or something for someone else. And we lost that connection as well, no doubt.
Yeah, and also, too, when you think about it, though, waste is really what the basis of cancer is that it's something else. It's something different than. In other words, it's another conversation going on within the body, just as all this material stuff is another conversation that you interact with. You know what I mean? So if you think about it, it's really what are all of these energy sources all spinning around us, and we're just disengaged. And that's really when you can call it unhealthy. And that's really when you can call it illness. You can call it whatever you want. The idea of, hey, I'm going to just do what I can do in my life and I'm good to go. That's a disengaged life. An engaged one is you understand things. You buy things in glass. You try not to over-purchase. You might be saying, well, maybe I'll take a drug if I need it, but if I don't need it, maybe I'll encourage my body to do something differently, do herbs, do some good foods. So it's really about a really totally two disconnect paradigms, yes?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the cancer example is a beautiful one because there's some very sort of strange paradoxes, and this is sort of the we were talking before about some of the tangential stuff that I've grown up or done separately from my sort of core career in healthcare. But, you go back a billion years and you study species that were around, like certain single-cell organisms, certain amoebas that were present a billion-plus years ago on the planet. And strangely enough, they have the same set of cancer-causing genes as single-cell organisms that we have as multicellular. So why is this? Well, what we're beginning to find out is that they use those, the same genes that, you know, tumors use to, you know, agglomerate together and communicate in their way and then separate, swim away, and do all the crazy stuff that metastasizing cancers do. Single-cell organisms like to do a billion years ago because it allowed them to get together as a community and take care of certain advantages in the world that was around back then. And so there is like one of the most bizarre sort of smack-in-the-face examples of even something like cancer, which, yes, we're going in the wrong direction because many of those genes exist still. We have them. Mm-hmm. And they're integrally, and this is another funny thing, because people always say, well, can't we just take those regeneration genes and, you know, genetically engineer some superhuman? And we say no, because you know what? Many of the genes for regeneration are cancer genes. And so there's this weird sort of cyclical dynamic that is showing up in emerging fields like systems biology that say we're doing everything really very wrong with regard to our mentality on whether we kill something or how we interfere with it. And so, your point is beautiful and eloquently.
You know, it's interesting, too, when we think about it, we always say, you know, cancer, everybody's running, it's like, get it out of me, get it out of me. And I think really the disservice that humans are producing is the concept that I'm going to do it because I want to. In other words, we know what foods are healthy for us, but will you still sit them down and eat a bag of Cheetos or sit down and have 40 drinks that night? And they say, because I want to. So in essence, it's almost like the human brain is the problem and it needs to just like take a trip. And the body will do just fine, you know? And it's the idea that these concepts that you're going to command it, and so it is, that really get us in trouble, I think. You know, if you look at, like, maybe I have zillions of geckos here, salamanders, whatever. And, you know, they'll come out and they'll sit in the sun and, you know, and if it's a cold day, they won't go very far from their hole to sit in the sun and they'll go right back in if they feel a chill. You know, they kind of like, in other words, have the concept that this is what I do, this is what I don't do, and it's quick response. In other words, they don't sit down and dissertate, oh my gosh, you know, I really have to go on a diet because it's January 1st. I have to eat what everybody says. And hey, I can't wait till February 1st because I'm going to go off the diet just like everybody else and quantify. In other words, the stories we tell ourselves might be what's getting us in trouble. So maybe if we could just disconnect this brain, can you imagine where we might actually end up?
Well, if we can get the thoughts of, as you say, control out of our minds, and also sort of the chill, there's sort of this desire to kill everything sort of with a nuclear blast being an approach, we'll be much better off. Because, you know, once again, I love to point out that all of the organisms in nature that are cancer resistant or cancer resilient or whatever the term you want to use for it, don't try to kill cancer. This is a fascinating thing. What do? They try to change it. And we've known about this as a scientific community for almost 100 years. And you go into the literature, everyone goes into the literature to look at, you know, stuff that's been done, and you barely go back to scientific papers from the 1930s, 1940s. But back then, when we were first testing carcinogens on species of animals, we tested them, aside from the guinea pigs and the rabbits and the rats and so forth, we tested them on, as you're saying, amphibians, geckos, frogs. And there's these amazing papers from the 1940s which, you know, show us giving cancer with some nasty carcinogen to a tank full of frogs somewhere, and the frogs developing nasty tumors. And then 2 weeks later, the frogs being tumor-free. It was always one of those bizarre things that was chalked up, oh, somebody messed around with my experiment. But no, now, only 100 years later, as we're sort of examining this area, we're finding out, well, what the frogs were doing were turning the tumors back into normal tissue because they realized, or the system realized, those tumors didn't serve a purpose and they weren't supposed to be around. So we turned them into what was normal and what was natural to turn them. we didn't think about a kill event. And just like I point out, you know, you find out tomorrow you have Alzheimer's disease, you're developing that, but you don't cut your brain out. You don't cut out your pancreas if you find out you have type 2 diabetes. And this kill centric approach to everything, and maybe what's, you know, as you were saying, maybe it's ingrained in the structure of the human psyche, it gets us into problems in a major way that we're probably beginning.
Well, I think so too. The concept also that of killing also brings upon the idea of the human as a superiority being, because really, if you look at it, we many in human reality will say it's about me, it's about what I'm doing, it's about how high I can go, it's about what I can acquire, it's about how smart I can be and how important I can be. So really, in essence, while we see that part in the body and in nature and stuff like that, and in the pharmaceuticals or in the drugs or whatever it could be, we've also got it in the way in which we interact and act with in the human species. It's almost like we haven't decided that I'm interdependent in this world. This world does depend on me as I depend on it. Instead, we continue to believe that we are in our own little glass tube, you know?
And I point out repeatedly that even now, looking beyond that glass tube, things that are going on from the micro level of our genes and proteins to the more macro level of tissues and organs and the microbiome and those 100 trillion bacteria and viruses and so forth that live within us, we are now seeing slowly but surely increasing evidence of the grander cosmic level stuff affecting us too. You look over here a couple hundred miles above your head, and you look at the experiment recently done on those twins, one that was hanging out at the International Space Station and the one that was down here on Earth, and you know, how much when he came down, how much he was changed versus the guy that stayed on Earth. You're seeing this from related not just to the forces of gravity, but to the Earth's own electromagnetic field. You're seeing it in relation to, you know, solar and lunar cycles. And you're even seeing these fascinating studies in the area of so-called chronobiology, where time itself, you know, you and I and everyone, we're slightly different in the morning than we are at 11 o'clock, than we are at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm glad that this is now beginning to rear its head, and I will hope more and more people take it, you know, advantage of exploring what's going on. But once again, I point, if we ignore this integrated dynamic, whether it's a very micro level or this extreme macro level, we don't get it. We won't get it, and we need to.
You know, because the two twins is a perfect example of the environment around you in which you exist. In other words, you are interdependent upon the air you breathe, the water you have, the gravity, you know, does the sun come up, does the sun go down, you know, and then you go into space and it's like there is no sunrise, sunset, maybe, depending where you are, you know, the different gravity, the different air, there's different constituents there. And it's really about being able to say, where am I today, you know, and how can I do well in this environment? If I'm not, I might need to move or something. We look at MS, you know, MS, they say, oh, it's in women of the northern latitude. And it's like, well, hey, if you have MS or you feel like you're getting it in the northern latitude, maybe you should move to Florida. Hey, maybe that's why all the elders are moving in Florida and they all of a sudden get well, right? You know, we think about it so lightly. But really, these conversations, if you really kind of follow them through the rabbit hole, eventually we're starting to ask some of these questions. It's just it might not always look the same, but it actually is. We're saying, oh my gosh, my joints really hurt if I live in Pennsylvania, but if I go to Sedona, they don't hurt so much. Well, it's because your body is talking and communicating with the environment around you. Your cells say, I'm not so stressed anymore. You're not out shoveling snow, but you might be out jogging. So it's all about all of these communications. I mean, not only are we communicating with our mouth or our eyes or our thoughts, we're communicating also within ourselves. Don't you think it's like salamanders, you know, hey, they had it on Facebook that they were dropping because they were frozen, you know? So it's all about the intercommunication. If we really took this all the way down to the cellular level, cells communicate, period, just as well as us, right?
It's down the cellular level, and I would argue even beyond, because, yes, cells communicate, but what we are finding out now, and I joke once again that, you know, if you and I, you know, were to go in a time machine and go back 100 years to some biology lab somewhere, we wouldn't be hearing about genes and proteins right. as much. We would hear these weird terms like fields and forces and waves. And now what you're seeing, strangely enough, in a very positive way, you're seeing these topics that were once reserved for sort of turn of the 20th century physics with
right.
now 21st century. And you look at groups like at Tufts University, with what Dr. Michael Levin is doing with bioelectric fields, or what's going on down at RMIT in Australia with biomagnetic resonance, where they're saying, you know, they're finally figuring, you know how 100 trillion cells with 25,000 protein-coding genes each communicate so effectively? They're doing it by biomagnetic resonance. And so all of these concepts are finally coming back to the table. And I've always found it, just a side note, you know, we're getting into things like electricity and magnetism and light, which are all parts of our bodies at the very at the subnuclear level. I find it fascinating how small you can go, because just as we're talking about the grander cosmic level scheme of things, whether it's magnetic fields or solar radiation or gravity, you've got to remember, and I point this to my children all the time, you know, there's many more degrees of smallness
right.
in the universe than there are bigness. And so, you know, once we jump down, you know, we named our company BioSpark just because, you know, we thought sparks are pretty cool subatomic particles, and they have the merging of biology and physics. But, you know, there's many orders of magnitude beneath there that we know nothing about. And, you know, who knows what's happening and where the control centers are coming. I would argue there's probably much more happening at the small level than at the cosmic level, but we just, you know, we'll learn more about in the next 10, 15 years. But it's all really fascinating.
You know, it's interesting, too. I've had many quantum physicists on the show before, and we all talk about perception and about that we're really just an energy body, and everything, you know, the body is just a collection of all of these conversations going on at once. And when we talk about energy, we say, well, if really what's out there is really just based upon your perception. In other words, if I look at the sky and I say the sky is blue, someone else could turn around and say, no, the sky is all cloudy and it's green, you know, and it's really based upon perception. And we see that with meditation, we see this with mindfulness now, and the bodies are responding because we're changing the conversation, we're changing the story. We're not saying, oh my gosh, I'm going to die tomorrow. We're saying, I'm going to enjoy my moment-to-moment kind of idea and just live in that very second versus trying to concoct all of this other drama going on around us. So the cells say, hey, I can do that. I can handle this moment. I'm good with that, you know, and give it positive feedback and then change a whole other system in your body. And people are saying, where are these miracle cures coming from? Well, maybe it's just that conversation that's going on, right, on the energy level.
Yeah, it's and I'll be the first to I very much enjoy the area of quantum physics and mechanics. By no means am I an expert to talk that much about it, but I clearly would say that in a world where the knowledge of quantum dynamics is feeding into biology and quantum biology and so forth, and the fact that, you know, only recently retrocausality, the ability of the future to affect the past, has somewhat been proven at the subatomic level. One has to, you know, accept, yes, not only are we an energy system, a combinatorial set of electricity, of magnetism, of light, of sound, but electricity, magnetism, light, sound can be influenced by time, not just the past, but by things happening in the future. So those miracle cures could be coming from, you know, you don't know. It could be coming from knowledge, information in the future that is drawing us in that direction, that is promoting not just intercellular communication in our body at this point in time, but at other times. It's, yes, we live in a miraculous age, I believe, or our understanding of something dynamic.
You know, I think that we get stuck in the concepts of that human seems to drum down, you know, and what we're kind of like told is that everything is linear, beginning, cause, effect, and an end. And really what a lot of quantum physics we are exploring, you know, these days, I think with the energy ideas, is that there are bazillions of timelines, there are bazillions of possibilities, and are we existing almost always in ordered chaos versus a linear progression? You know, and I think that's really the idea to say, that's the idea of a miracle cure, or, hey, all of a sudden this, you just take this plant and you have just sprouted like 100 wings and you're doing great. It's the idea of just being able to communicate with that spot. Do you know what I mean? In other words, something just shows up and it just plain works. You know, and it's like, where did it come from? Who knows? Where is it going? Who knows? But all I know is right now in this second, wow, this is really cool. I think we see that a lot in science. We see that a lot in our own human lives, is that something shows up and it just, in other words, the two different timelines intersect, or the two different spots just come together, and it's a miracle. And we see that, you know, with birth, we see that, and probably with regeneration, just all of a sudden, hey, spark, something showed up, you know. Mm-hmm. But we always, as a human, always want to know why, you know, that linear kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We cannot. It doesn't serve us very well only to be focusing from that specific angle, because, yes, I think if we can step back and accept and try to sort of train our brains to think more multidimensionally in that context, these won't be aha moments. There'll be sort of obvious things that we've been missing for too long.
I think we see that in healthcare when they say, something happened and they can't describe it, and then they'll start to call it snake oil or fish this or that or whatever, you know. In other words, they've got to diss it all the way down the highway, you know, because they can't explain it and it's not in their wheelhouse, you know. And I think if we kind of as humans might accept more of these spectacular things that just show up, instead of trying to diss them, we'll really exponentially, I think, progress.
Yeah, I think a wonderful example of that, and hopefully it will become more and more prevalent, is sort of this, what's happening with, microbiome research nowadays, where, whether it's the microbiome or whether it's the virome, yes, there is millions and millions of bugs out there, and millions of viruses, but a very small percentage of them kill us. And
right.
A large majority of them are very good for us, and some would point out that, hey, if it wasn't for viruses, we probably wouldn't be here in our current form, and so forth and so on. And the fact that we're beginning to see the understanding, hey, you know what, we can create therapeutic opportunities where we keep those bugs alive.
Right.
Not a much amount, you know, that bug making penicillin for us anymore, which is great, did a good job for us 100 years ago. But what about the living organism? It is just the life sciences, not the dead sciences. So we're beginning to see a movement that says, okay, let's think holistically. Let's think, hey, these are good, nature's friends. They survived for 3 billion years. They have some answers for us. And if we don't kill them and keep them alive, then we can learn from them. Just like we can learn from fish, we can learn from the tree, we can learn so much. And I think we're all on the same page at this point.
You know, it's the funniest thing. People will say, I've got a staph infection in my cut. And then of the last several years, doctors will finally admit that staph is always on our skin because that's where it belongs, that's its principle. You know, but then you see people will have to get rid of it. It shouldn't be there. In other words, we kind of like run in this fear kind of paradigm that if it's, quote, potentially going to be bad for me, I don't want to intersect with it. And then we end up with people not having great barriers on their skin to be able to fend off anything that would come along. You know, I think so. The idea that is there good or bad bacteria, good or bad viruses? Well, maybe on our skin, this is like this little community that says, hey, we could fight off things. Here we go. And then you get a cut and you'll say, ooh, that was too many for me. Give me a little while and I'll be able to clear it up. If we would sometimes let our skin take over the battle and do it for us, it might turn into something really great. You know, it's just that we rush so much to be able to head off the tsunami that we think might be coming because it's an old dogma story.
Yep, and we forget equally not only about, you know, those communities, but, you know, the sort of the new terminology is hologenomics, the fact that, you know, you can't look at your genome anymore, even though, mm-hmm. you know, human genomics has been so exciting in the news the last, you know, 10, 20 years, but you're much more than human. We are human. You and I are human. Everyone listening is human. But our genome, remember, contains the evolutionary past of 3 billion years of everything that came before us. So the very concept of, you know, the fact that, you know, I'm here as a human and those microbes are, you know, have billions of years of knowledge within them living upon me, and that we are a integrated genome, a hologenome, as the terminology is used nowadays, begins to make a lot of sense. And when you see the development of research disciplines such as the newest one, which is so exciting to me, interkingdom signaling, which is showing that that bacteria's signal, its living signal, is able to speak to my cells.
Right.
It's able to speak. Two cells, you know, forget me, it's just one of my cells, and that bacteria separated by, you know, 3 billion years of evolution, but they're able to talk. And this mm-hmm. is a fascinating area to me because it opens up possibilities that we just, in our lockdown thinking, that we're just human, that we've just been here a couple hundred thousand years and forget, you know, hey, well, yeah, I did have a tail and I did have gills and I did have webbed hands and feet when I was inside my mother. Oh, that doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
I completely.
You know, I think so also, too, the idea that humans have given up power. They've given up the power to make decisions. They've given up power to take care of themselves. They've given up the power to be able to coexist with others. We see this a lot when we say we have to go for a J-O-B every day because that's what keeps you here on Earth and everything else. Everybody else has control. Your physician takes care of your health. Your eye doctor takes care of your eyes. You know, your wife takes care of your food. Your kids take care of your sanity. You know what I mean? And so we've kind of like given things out versus being able to say, how can we interconnectedly have a conversation within that, you know? This giving out of stuff so many times, you know, it really seems to be to our detriment sometimes.
Yeah, I am completely in agreement with that too. And fortunately, we are waking up, I think, as a species, as a race, to these problems, or at least the problematic way that we've done things. And glad to see it is more than just you and I that are understanding it and needing at least to try to remedy it with outside of the box thinking and outside the box health.
Right. Well, you know, I think we see it a lot too when people are going, quote, off the grid. They're learning how to survive. They're learning what's important, you know, or else they're kind of like tanking, but they really are giving it a whole big good, you know, try. You know, they're really getting out there and saying, I'm really going to try it and see what I'm made out of, you know, to see really what humans are made out of. You know, it's the most interesting thing, you know, you and I have both been on paths, but we've kind of like explored everything around it in our lives. But one thing really stuck out to me was in open heart surgery. You know, when you take the blood out of the body and put it into the perfusion machine and you're sitting there with the body in front of you and everything's totally flatlined and you're working on this body, and then all of a sudden you just put that blood back in and, hey, all of a sudden, ooh, it comes to wake. You know, I was like, okay, so what's all this about? You know, and if you think about it, isn't that like a question you just go, wow, that really shows something that we haven't even touched on in our lives to understand how or what the body actually is and actually where is the life force, don't you think? I mean, that really, that will blow your mind if you stand there and watch it. You're like, okay. So in essence, this body is dead, but you're just going to put blood in it and it's going to start working, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's the freakiest thing that you could ever think about. And you say, why? Why does it work? Right?
Why does it work? And then, you know, along those lines of freakiness, and, that is one of the things sort of that those experts that ponder sort of clinical death, discuss, or at least the ones that are open to looking at it, definitely have in front of them. In our area, we have even freakier ones in the sense that there are many, many species on this planet whose brains you can destroy, which regenerate them, and somehow, and we've known this since the 1950s, somehow they remember things from before the brain was destroyed. On top of that, I love to point out, and this is feeds into this whole area of non-central nervous system information processing, which we've everyone's just thrown that aside. No, there's no way we could process information elsewhere. But hey, we live on a planet with organisms that do not have brains, who have communicated electrochemically for hundreds of millions of years without a brain. You and I and everyone listening, when we were embryos, we didn't have a brain for the first several weeks, yet did a lot of fascinating stuff. And then, what are we learning is that our heart, our bones, our pancreas, it's even been demonstrated schools of sperm that seek an egg to fertilize, communicate between them. And these are single cells now. So we know nothing.
We know nothing about anything. If you even take our whole entire time today, we say all we've done today is we've raised questions. But boy, it's great to raise the questions, because then we can say, I really don't know anything, and then explore it. That's really what I think that's the really great thing about us and this conversation, is that we can say, look at this, and oh, cool, instead of being stuck in the past and saying, well, go ahead and prove it, the evidence-based medicine garbage, It's like, hey, I don't know why it happens, but just enjoy the moment, right?
Yeah, if I can do putting aside business and everything else, if I can excite one person with these concepts, it's just pick up a book and think and learn more about them. It's amazing when you talk to people and I never knew that, I never knew that, for instance, terminal lucidity, phenomena where Alzheimer's patients whose brains are ravaged become completely lucid at the end of their life, that it even existed. I never knew that children can be born without a cortex and still be conscious. I really, if we, through our conversation, a potential series of conversations in the future can excite people, get them interested, we've done much more.
I think I've always said that I lived a life of why. I would always do that. I mean, even to this day, people will say, oh, God, here she comes again. It's why this, why that? And they're like, I don't know. They get frustrated because they've stopped asking the questions. But I enjoy asking the questions because I think that without the why, it expands your life. It expands your insight. It expands the opportunities that you can engage in a different way. So really, if we end up with a diagnosis of chronic disease or cancer or something, and we say, and the doctor says, this is what's going to happen, turn around and say, why? Why, right? Mm-hmm. And say, and then change the story, change the conversation. Isn't that where all of these newfounded chemicals and therapies and treatments come from? Because somebody will say, I went out and I explored my why concept.
Yep. They explored the why concept deeper than anyone has, or they had an accident.
Yeah.
it cycles back also to the fact that people were willing to explore, but also people were not afraid to take the risks that too many people are afraid of doing today and get involved in research that might have been a little outside of their comfort zone. But oops, here's some penicillin.
Yeah.
Oops, here's the opiate, and so forth. So, we need more of that.
And also talk to kids, because kids are not bound by fear, structure, or dogma. You know, when you speak to kids, I live here in New Orleans, and they talk about the idea of the levees, and it's like, oh, there's a hole in the levee, and they have this whole dissertation on how they're going to fix it. And a kid will say, hey, just put a piece of paper down there and push the dirt up. That's how it happens. And it's like, oh, you know what I mean? So in other words, listen to the simplicity in things and have a conversation around it. You just never know where you might go, don't you think?
Out of the mouths of babes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right. They have not been corrupted. They have not been, they have not had their childish enthusiasm for,
right.
As Einstein used to say, staring at the infinite and being in awe of it.
Absolutely. Well, Iris, it was such a pleasure to have this conversation. I think it was great because what we've done is we really said, hey, everything is not stuck. It's not solid. It's not firm. It's all ever-changing. And really, isn't it great to be on the ride? So could you share with the listeners more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, you can find out more about everything we're doing as on the regeneration and rejuvenation front, bioquark.com, BIOQARK. Reach out anytime. We love to talk to people, and whether it's clinicians or clinics or other companies, we love to talk about what we're doing and sharing information. We're completely transparent, and we believe and passionate about this. So and investigate and look into these topics and reach out to us at any time.
Well, Ira, thank you so much for joining us today. I think we'll have you on for another time when it's like, we just want to say, hey, let's have a conversation, and it's a great time. So thank you so much for joining us.
Dr. Ira, it was a pleasure.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Ira Pastor, again, do check on the link on the bottom of today's show page, and you go directly to the website to find out about Ira's work. And it's really about being able to say, it's not just a beginning and end and you trudge through it. Gosh, how boring is that? Get out and enjoy what's going on and ask why and touch and feel and sense what's going on, and you never know where it might take you. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.